Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Triangulation is brought to you by CacheFly at CacheFly.com.
This is Triangulation, episode 134. Photographer Peter Krogh. Triangulation is brought to you by Audible.com. To download a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/triangulation. It's time for Triangulation, the show where we interview and get to spend some time with some of the smartest, most interesting people on the internets. And I'm glad to bring back to our studio a good friend of mine, a guy I refer to all the time, photographer Peter Krogh. He's a Washington, D.C.-based photographer who's been on TWiT Photo with us before. But you know the name probably because I say every three or four radio shows, I will say, and by the way, 3, 2, 1, back up, get the damn book, and by which I mean Digital Asset Management book by Peter Krogh. Hey, Peter, good to have you back.
Leo, it's great to be here.
This time on Triangulation.
Yeah.
You're in town just kind of, I mean, normally you're in D.C., right?
I am normally in D.C., and I'm on a California tour here.
Because you got a new book, which we'll talk about.
Got a new book, and got a bunch of people to see, and awesome. You're high on the list.
What kind of photography do you... Is it editorial? What do you do?
Most of my work in the last, you know, 5 or 10 years has been business communications. And, you know, that could be for an association as well. I'd put that under the same umbrella.
But using photography?
Using photography, also video these days.
Really? Yeah. I think a lot of photographers now say don't make the distinction between still and video. This is all the same kind of
thing. I think both the devices have come together as well as the publication platforms are coming together and the skill sets. And, you know, I'm loving it. I think it's great.
If you had your druthers, any kind of photography, and there were money to be made doing it, what would you do? That's the question. Money
pictures of
made.
My kids when they were 5 years old. Really,
I know,
really
me
cute.
Too. Me too. Yeah. By the way, we should mention Peter also does Lynda.com classes. They're a sponsor, and we love them. And you've done Lightroom classes for them.
I did a class on expression media.
Let's bring that up.
Yeah.
So when we I met Peter a few years ago when Mikkel Oland asked Peter and a bunch of really great photographers and me to in a separate category to go to Tasmania for his Lightroom Adventure Lightroom Adventure book. We had a great time.
Yeah, that was a great trip.
And it was really fun meeting Peter and spending 2 weeks in a beautiful land too. Tasmania is gorgeous. And at the time, of course, I bent Peter's ear, as I did all the photographers, trying to learn anything, something that would make me a better photographer. But also, because of Peter's book, The Damn Book, about workflow.
Yeah.
And you've really become an expert on workflow for photographers. And at the time, you know, we were there doing Lightroom. Adobe was there. Mikkel was writing a book on Lightroom. So we spent a lot of time talking about Lightroom. But I asked you, well, what do you manage your library of photography with? And you said Expression Media.
Yeah.
Expression Studio, I guess it was.
It was really Expression Media,
Expression Media.
Maybe Microsoft had just bought it.
I don't think they had.
And they were... but in any case, the first couple of versions of Lightroom did not really want to handle the numbers of pictures that I have in my library.
How many?
About 500,000.
Oh! Yeah. And then also...
And there's even a few good ones in there.
That can't all be online, so you have to have offline capability. I mean, this is tricky. So
yeah,
at the time, you're using Expression Media to keep track of all of that.
Sure, and then there's a ton of stuff I had that was in all different kind of formats and, you know, multiple variations. And, of course, these days there's now video and audio. I'm using Lightroom exclusively to manage the camera files. And that's really the bulk of the 500,000 pictures.
The
stuff I shoot with the camera and...
As opposed to,
in some cases, the 30 or 40 different copies of...
Edited,
of a derivative
stuff.
File.
Okay.
Or the audio files. Or the video files. Video capability.
Is there one program that could do all of that?
Not yet.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'd really like to see it, wouldn't we?
Yeah. Microsoft bought Expression Media, changed it to Expression Studio, then sold it again.
Yeah. It's been kind of a checkered story, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's owned by Phase One, and I think it's incredibly useful for some people. You know, if you can put everything in one single environment and keep it that way, it's by far the best way to go.
Yeah.
You know, if you think of one kind of thing you can open up and see all of the media you've made in your whole life,
what an incredible thing. And I never really thought I could do it with Lightroom, but I guess I can, because your new book is called Organizing Your Photos with Lightroom 5, The Damn Book Guide. And this is available at thedambook.com. And it is one of the reasons it's not a paper book is because it's 208 pages, but also 7 hours of video. This is a real multimedia project.
Yeah, I think the this whole new world of being able to put instructional material together and use the media that's appropriate for it. And you know, sometimes that's text, sometimes that's going to be photos or screenshots, and sometimes that's going to be videos. And at other times, you know, it may be an interactive web kind of experience. Right.
This is an example of chapter one, where there, you know, it starts like a normal book with text, but then you get to video 1-1, the three layers of organization, and now we got a 7-minute video.
Yeah, and when you click that, it pops out.
It walks you through.
And you
it.
Get a video.
That's neat.
And I, neat. What I've done with the text is set up the videos.
Yeah.
And then put the stuff in text that you might want to return to or that you will want to return to.
It's almost like notes about what you.
Yeah, I mean, if you think about it, it's so much easier to see something in practice.
Right.
And then when you need to put it in practice, you don't want to have to go scrub through a 7-minute video to find the 6 different things.
I'm really glad to find this because I do use Lightroom.
Yeah.
And I love Lightroom. And actually, almost all of my edits are in Lightroom. I don't have the same issue you do with multiple versions through Photoshop and stuff. So let's kind of go into depth. Before we do, can these techniques be used in something besides Lightroom?
So there's a overall philosophy of organizing a media collection that actually is something that I've developed and worked with on all levels, up to people who are running enterprise level content management systems, and so this understanding of storing your stuff, tagging your stuff, and then making useful creations with it, I think works for every program, and for every kind of level.
Right.
But this book itself is very specifically targeted to the Lightroom user.
You actually, another thing I plug all the time is you did this with the Association of, American Society of Media Photographers and the Library of Congress. It's dpbestflow.org. That was kind of, it seems to me this is kind of the philosophies encapsulated here, right?
Absolutely. There's a really smart guy named Richard Anderson who was the originator of the project, and he and I worked hand in hand to build the thing. And we spent a lot of time looking at how to design this curriculum and how to use the different media types to best advantage.
Ah, interesting.
Yeah.
And mostly what I crib from here is your famous 3-2-1 backup.
There's a ton of other stuff in there about storage, but of course, you being Leo Laporte, the kind of computer hardware and storage and all of that other stuff, I feel, is that stuff you got wired.
Yeah, I could talk about the hard drives, but what you say is, and I think this is so important, a backup's not a backup unless you have, and I agree with you, a primary and 2 backups. In other words, 3 copies.
Yes, absolutely.
And when you delete one copy, then you only have 2 copies. People do this all the time. They back it up. And they say, well, I got a backup, and then they delete the original. Now you don't have a backup because there's only one copy.
Yeah.
So 3 copies, 2 different media, hard drive and optical media, for instance. And that's because you just don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah, and I put an asterisk in there, and I'm going to return to that in just a second.
Okay. And then finally, one copy off-site.
Yeah, and that's really important for most people. You know, if you live in a secure bunker somewhere, maybe you don't need
if
to
you're
have,
in a salt mine in Utah, you are off-site.
You know, or if you have Dr. Evil's armed guards. Of course, they aren't all that effective.
Steve Gibson copies everything. You know, he has it on his hard drive, copies it to optical media, and then mails it to his mom.
Yeah.
That's off-site.
What a great
And he says, Mom, you don't have to know what this is. Just put it in somewhere. And if I ever ask if you for it, you can give it to me.
Yeah, I know people that they say, oh, well, this hard drive goes down at a drawer in my local bar.
Perfect.
And
that's awesome.
Every Friday, I'm going over to the bar.
And I visit my data.
And so
network attached storage plus a cloud backup of that would be probably what a lot of people might use in a local hard drive. But there's also, and you don't mention this, but there's a distinction between online backup or something that you can get to right away. Online, let's put it storage. Let's not say backup. Online storage, near line storage, and then offline storage.
Yeah.
And that's the thing I have the most trouble managing when it comes to. I mean, you must, too, with 500,000 photos. You're not going to keep them all on your hard drive in your computer.
Yeah, you know, you start to get into a multi-dimensional problem there when you really have more stuff than you can keep on one hard drive. And I've actually written a second book that breaks all of that stuff off, and it's called Multi-Catalog Workflow.
Okay.
And it really specifically addresses that. I think the vast majority of people who use Lightroom can get by with one single unified storage device, you know, one big photo library drive.
Right.
Now that you can buy 4 terabyte
it's not so hard.
Drives,
yeah.
they're not that many people who
right.
have that much, you know, more than that.
No, in fact,
mine
easily fits on a terabyte drive with lots of room to spare. So I have, I keep this, okay, this is, I'm sure, completely wrong, but I'll tell you what I do. I get back from the shoot, I immediately import everything into Lightroom. If I'm a good little boy, I then delete, you know, I go through it and tag the stuff I want to keep. Some, you know, I've seen people do 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, but I just hit the tilde key, and that says flag this. Then I delete everything that's not flagged.
Yeah.
And actually, I may or may not do that, depending on how ambitious I am. But if I am ambitious, I'll delete everything that's not flagged. I keep this year's work on my internal drive.
Right, so you've got SSD there.
Yeah, I don't have a lot of space.
It a little bit. Yeah.
Don't have a lot of space, so this year's work there. But I also have connected not one but two external hard drives. And I have I keep the Lightroom catalog and all of the originals backed up on one, and then sync that one to the other. And if I'm traveling, I'll do that fairly frequently. And then I split the drives into luggage, carry-on, and checked.
Right. So I think one of the keys is for most people, try and consolidate your photo library onto one drive.
Right.
Have a duplicate of it.
Right.
Ideally, you have one that's
yep.
living so, in your house
yep.
or in your...
I do.
You know,
and then I have one in my drawer at work because I
And then
I
one
bring
in
it to
another
work.
Building.
Yeah.
And for most people, you know, almost every story I hear has to do with the fact that, you know, the real stories of loss are somebody who just hasn't done that really basic stuff.
Right.
Now, you know, if you have a huge library, it gets more complex. But for most people, that simple thing gets you, you know, 99% of the way there. One of the things that that I think, I don't know, are you using the smart previews in Lightroom?
Now tell me about that.
So this is a really wonderful new capability that they put out, which is to have essentially a proxy file. It's a downsized but still mostly raw version of the picture that can live with the catalog. And so your photo library can be huge and living elsewhere, but you can keep the smart preview on your in your catalog on your modest sized SSD and still have the ability to adjust it and output and tag it, even if you're not at home and connected to the big photo library.
Okay, so I'm looking at my Lightroom catalog right here. This has about 7,000 images from my last trip, right? And, of course, I started really well deleting images the first 5 days, and then I didn't do it again.
Right.
So this is just everything at this point, right? So how do I make... I've been doing one-to-one previews because... Well, for a variety of reasons. One, because I used to use a service called Everpix that would back up the one-to-one previews.
Yeah.
They don't exist anymore.
Yeah.
So what do you recommend? No longer doing one-to-one previews? Because those are big.
One-to-one previews when you're running through your first edit to look for focus.
Because then when you look at it, you're seeing a full copy. It's a JPEG, right?
Right. And it's the full size. Lightroom's right. decoded the information, and it
right.
shows you that full-size picture.
So for best results, you want to use a full one-to-one.
For checking focus.
Because then you can zoom in.
Yeah, you can
and you
zoom
can say,
in.
As, you know, are all the little details on the mosaic in focus? And
But once you've done that part of the edit,
mm-hmm.
you know, is it a keep or is it a trash?
Right.
Then one-to-ones are less useful.
Okay, and they take up a lot of space.
These smart previews take up a much smaller amount of space. And they allow you to have access to the pictures even when the original's offline.
That's great. Now, and it also will then say, how do I find the original? Will
it then it say just automatically it reconnects when you get back to where your photo library is.
You plug your drive back in.
You plug it back in, and it just, you don't have to do anything.
So
it
is
just,
this in the catalog settings? Where do I?
So you can find that in the library menu under previews.
Okay, library, previews. Okay, and it's
build smart previews.
Oh, look, there's an entry for it in the menu
It's
there.
Just really easy. Okay.
So now that I'm, for instance, done with my one-to-one previews, I should probably discard one-to-one previews.
Discard one-to-one, and you would use smart previews for, say you wanted to keep the greatest hits in your catalog here, and you wanted to have access to them even though you've transferred the main files off to the photo library.
Right.
So you could build smart previews of your four-star and better pictures, or some designation of... Or a collection that you've made of
flag photos.
Yeah, pictures that you
pictures
just want
to. Pictures from the trip.
Yeah, stuff.
So I'm going to go back into library previews, and I'm going to. Do you have to say this every time? Build smart previews.
So you do it only because you want to work with pictures offline.
Okay.
So you don't need to do it normally. If your pictures are there, you don't need it. It doesn't really help you.
But if I know I'm going to take this photo set and move it offline.
Right. So
then
what I do
would
is
build, I would make a library of just those photos, and I would build smart previews on that library or that folder.
Yeah, I mean, yes, exactly. And so I keep my greatest hits, you know, as smart previews in the catalog.
Got it.
So even though most of those are stored on a big drive back in the studio, if I have my laptop, I have the ability to adjust an output. Even when I'm on the road.
That's interesting. So I could say, okay, I really love this image. I don't have access to the original. I have the smart preview. I can make my adjustments onto that. And then when I connect later, it will, in effect, take the original.
It just seamlessly happens in the background. You don't have to do anything. The key is put your stuff away.
Right.
Don't rename it. Don't move it around.
Right.
Just put it away and leave it there.
Right.
And that's really this, you know, I think it's the foundation of building a good photo library is put your stuff away. You know, stack it up and back it up. And don't touch it. And use the catalog to make your cool connections and put pictures together instead of trying to move them around in folders.
Right, right. That's a fool's... It's almost like there's Yahoo cataloging the Internet and Google cataloging the Internet. It doesn't scale well. If you start putting stuff in photos by hand, it doesn't scale well.
Yeah, and that's actually a really good analogy because one of them was kind of like, oh, we're building the biggest library in the world. Let's kind of build it like it's a regular library.
Right.
And the other guys are like,
no. It's flat file. There's no folders.
Let's use computers keywords. To do the things that computers do.
Well, let's talk about that, actually, because this goes back to when you import your photos. We're going to talk about that. We're talking to Peter Krogh. He is the author of The Damn Book, a book I've referred to so many times on all my shows that I just feel like I owe you a bunch of plugs. Well, I guess that's a plug when I talk
that's
about
a plug.
It.
Yeah.
You can go to The Damn Book. Let's see, where is it? TheDamnBook.com. While you're there, you can also see a link to Peter's newest book, which is called Organizing Your Photos, and also the ebook Multi-Catalog Workflow with Lightroom 5, which obviously is in a deeper way what we've just kind of been talking about.
Yeah, that's really geared specifically toward pros or just people with enough of a large library or who have a need to collaborate or some other need that drives them to having more than one catalog. Most people...
That's not necessary.
Most people keep it simple.
What's the cutoff? Half a million images? A million images?
So my working catalog has about 90,000 pictures in it.
Okay.
That's my little one. Right? The big one has 400 and change, I think.
Can Lightroom handle a catalog that big?
Yes, it can.
Okay, that's good to know, too.
Absolutely.
If you don't have one-to-one previews.
Well, you know, it depends on the machine to some degree. SSDs, I'm sure you talk about that all the time.
They're great. They're so fast.
It totally changes what a...
The cost per gigabyte is so high that you want to be a little more judicious in how you use it.
Yeah.
But, and yet the speed is so nice.
But it's a great use for a Lightroom catalog. Or that Lightroom catalog is a great use for.
Well, it's funny because we were talking about how the different arrangements. I have the internal drive, which is SSD, and I have an external SSD, and then I have a slow spinning drive, and that's the biggest drive, and that's the one that I archive stuff onto and then bring to work. Good. More with Peter in just a moment.
Can we interrupt this edition of Triangulation? I hope you're enjoying it. For a little Audible ad, and then we're going to get back to work. Audible is the great place to go for audiobooks, 150,000 titles strong. I'm right now listening. Okay, let's make you a deal. I'm going to get you a free book, okay? Basically, the first month free of the Gold account at audible.com. That means a credit towards a book plus the Daily Digest of the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal read to you. Great readers, too. Not robotic voices. No lisps. No piercing, screeching sounds, unless you get the Gilbert Gottfried books, which he reads. Really, what Audible does is they hire the best actors to bring these books to life. And I think it's like you're listening to a great movie. Right now, I'm listening, and I've got a list because I was talking with Jeff Needles. He just finished the Johnny Ive book, loved it. So I'm going to add that to my list. Leon Ercani's great book. He's right now reading the book called Dogfight about Google and Apple and the Google and Apple wars. I'm reading, and I told Jeff he should read this. And this is what happens when you get Audible people together. What are you listening to? I'm reading The Everything Store, the new Brad Stone book about Jeff Bezos. It's great. It's like a business class in a book. And then you're listening to this book when all the times you can't hold a book. You know, you're driving. You're walking the dog, you're doing the dishes, you're making the... The truth is, I listen to Audible all the time. Even when I would probably be reading a book nowadays, I listen in bed. I listen on my phone. I listen all the time. In the airplane, we're going to fly to Vegas tonight. You better believe I'm taking Audible with me. Here's the deal. You can take it with you, too. audiblepodcast.com/triangulation. That's where you go to get your first book free. I think that the Jeff Bezos book would be good, The Everything Store. Vogelstein's Dogfight, boy, I can't wait to read that. That's actually, if you look at my list, I've been an Audible subscriber since 2000, which means that my library is chock full of great books. And you can see the next one is going to be Hatching Twitter by Nick Bilton. I just finished Difficult Men, Brett Martin. We're going to try to get him for Triangulation. He said he would do it. The Behind the Scenes in the Third Golden Age of Television, from The Sopranos and The Wire to Mad Men and Breaking Bad. Really good book if you like TV. Of course, when I went to Venice, I like to listen to books about the city I'm visiting. Walk around in the streets of Venice. You're listening to the history of Venice. It brings it to life. I love Audible. You will, too. My favorite book of all time. Now, I read this in hardcover, and I'm really excited about listening to Neal Stephenson's Cryptonomicon. 42 hours and 53 minutes long. You're going to love it. audiblepodcast.com/triangulation. Try it today, will you? Your first book's free.
Peter Krogh, our guest, peterkrogh.com, if you want to see his work. You sent me some images some of them are from our trip to Tasmania together.
Yeah, well, I figured if you didn't have those, you should have them for your archive.
I have a little bit of a soft spot. We did a great book, the Adobe Lightroom Adventure 2, that has a lot of these images. I think I was with you when you took this image.
You were. You and me and Bruce Dale and Winston Hendrickson.
Now, it's funny that you don't have this cropped. This is a pano, obviously.
Yeah, number one, I just kind of threw some stuff together
like it, though,
for you. But I do like this.
There's a certain fun
this
to
treatment.
It.
I mean, yeah. I like it more when it's deliberately, you know, or more obviously kind of showing a vibrance or motion or something like that. But I like the
How do you do your panos?
Round edges.
Tell me about your pano technique.
I am largely a handheld pano guy.
That's why you see these irregular images,
yep.
Because it's adjusting for the fact that the angle might have changed a little bit.
And I like the ability to do that in a kind of non-premeditated way. I mean, I do know how to do the whole tripod with rotating around the nodal point and doing all of that junk. And I have the equipment for it, but it's heavier and more cumbersome and slower to work with.
Well, and the point is, you're getting an excellent panorama here.
Yeah, and Photoshop
by
stitches
hand.
Panoramas beautifully. Just throw the pictures at Photoshop.
It's kind of funny because Bruce had the, you know, really right stuff, special pano head on the very fancy, you know...
great Gitzo tripod.
Gitzo tripod that... I had you guys weighing them off, holding them with your pinkies. And it took, and I remember we waited a really long time. We actually ate lunch there for the light to be just right and stuff. And I'm just going, and so some of us appreciate your handheld. And look how gorgeous that is.
Yeah.
Now, Photoshop did all the stitching. You don't use any special Pano software.
I'm throwing them into Photoshop, and it does a remarkably
good
job.
How many images? It looks like 4 or 5, maybe?
No, this would have been more like probably 10.
10, wow.
Yeah.
It's a big image then.
Yeah. Yeah, now with D800 shooting 36 megapixels, that can be a really big Pano. Ooh. But they're gorgeous when they're...
Oh yeah,
you know when you do them right.
This is probably in Hobart.
That was in Hobart. Yeah,
we had so much fun.
That was also outside of Hobart.
Yeah, yeah. This was. I think many of us got this image because this is the view outside our hotel window.
Yeah, after 36 hours of travel.
Yeah, I'll take that picture.
Oh, look at that. There it is.
What a beautiful
thank you.
Place.
Thank you, Mikkel.
Hey, who's that? There's somebody on a boat, it looks like.
Some guy with a camera.
We took a ferry, you, me, and Bruce, to get to that secluded spot the panel was on.
Yeah, wasn't that a joy going out on a shoot with Bruce Dale?
Another shot from that trip. Yeah.
Yeah.
Bruce, who is a National Geographic photographer and really a legend and... one of the senior guys, I think, in photography.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of the real, when you say National Geographic photographer, you're talking squarely about Bruce Dale and a handful of other people.
He did the image, the very, very famous National Geographic image. It was a holographic image some years ago of a crystal globe of the Earth being shattered by a high-speed bullet. And Bruce, the stories he tells of making that image are just amazing.
Yeah.
They only had 3 or 4 of the globes. They had to re-glue them so they'd have enough chances to take the images. He had to build a special sand table so everything could be still during the
shot. It's amazing how the technology has changed. You know, what was so difficult to achieve before, you know, what GoPro is now allowing you to do.
Well, then that was what was great about Bruce is he was a gadget hound way back when. It was really a challenge.
Yeah.
He talks about... he did a shoot for National Geographic of, I think, prairie dogs, where he had to manufacture a fake prairie dog and put a camera in its head or something, or coyotes or something. And now, with a GoPro, you can have an eagle take it away and get the image back. It's great. It's so much
fun. He was a great guy to travel with. And of course, Mikkel is wonderful.
So many great people on that
guy,
trip. Yeah. And oh, look at that. Now, this is obviously was a color image when you took it.
Yeah, actually, I have not really removed the color. It was pretty monochromatic in that cave. But it is an HDR composite, so that's about 7 stops of difference. And, you know, really, the naked eye could not see much of the texture in those walls, or I couldn't.
It was dark when we were in there.
It was really dark, and then
amazing.
Hit the exposures and combine them in post.
Yeah.
And really remarkable.
Were you using a Nikon 3D? Was that what you were shooting with?
It was probably a
D200. D200, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Mikkel was the only guy who had it had just come out.
Yeah, and I've liked the smaller cameras.
It's so just, big.
My back doesn't want me to be carrying the gigantic ones.
What do you use? Do you HDRs? Do you use Photoshop just for that, or do you use a third-party program?
You know, I actually don't do a huge amount of HDR. Photomatics, that one was done in Photomatics.
Yeah. I really love Photomatics.
You know what I found is that the latitude of the new cameras, the dynamic range, is so great.
One image.
I'm really more of a people shooter than anything else.
Right.
You've been showing a lot of landscapes and stuff, but the ability to capture all of that in one image. And pull the shadow detail out that appears to be gone and to
Back. Images, are they? Or these are just un-HDR'd versions of the...
Yeah.
Of the same cave.
I don't know what I sent you there.
Oh, these are beautiful. Look at these. That's probably Mikkel trying to run away from the leeches. Yeah. All right. Oh, look at this.
So, and that, you know, that has an HDR, look to it. But it's not.
It can't be because...
It's a single image.
No dog's going to sit there for 7 images.
No, they won't.
And that's one of the things I like. I mean, you've got a richness of tone that you can get from a single raw image.
Yeah, I think, you know, the whole photographic sensibility these days is changing. It, you know, everything used to really be about what film looked like, and
right.
digital photography first tried to replicate film.
Right.
And we're getting into a new world where those rules are no longer the rules of what makes it look like a photograph. And I think that's just a wonderful world to be moving into.
It's great for people like you because you're an experimenter. I really feel like you like to try stuff. I remember you had a lens baby. You were doing all sorts of interesting stuff with that. My first experience of tilt shift photography, and it's really fun to watch you work because you like to experiment. You like to try stuff. You also like, and this is a good example, this image, wide angle.
Yeah, I'm a wide angle shooter. I like it real wide angle.
And for portraiture, sometimes, I mean, it's not the most flattering, but
no.
you can get right in there.
No, I do. But
it's dramatic. I mean, look at that dog.
Yeah.
Now, fortunately, he's a dog. He's not going to say, my nose is not that big.
Right. Right. Well.
But it's dramatic. I love it.
I mean, and you know, I love a long lens shot, too. But I love context, and I think context is ever more important in
photographs. And wide angle gives you that.
Wide angle gives you, you know, puts you in a scene. It lets you see where you are.
It's hard for amateurs like me because it takes composition's hard because it's seeing so much.
It's a little harder to shoot, for sure, and especially extreme wide angle.
Right.
But
because it's hard, you know, it seems to me that taking an image is really about telling a story, directing the viewer's eye, and it's hard to do when the viewer can look at everything.
Yeah.
How do you, and this is a really good example of an image that so well works because you immediately look at the dog and the nose especially, it draws your eye, but then you look up that diagonal to the owner gazing at his own dog and his smile. There's such a story and a natural trajectory of the eye from the dog up the dog's nose to the owner. That's why it works.
Yeah, it's... I love the context you get with wide angle.
Yeah. So. What a neat shot. And this is probably more telephoto, I would guess.
No, this was wide.
Wide angle as well?
Yeah.
Yeah. This is the beautiful rainforest up in the north of
just an amazing place that.
I can't remember the name of it, but boy, that was gorgeous.
I think it was the Tasman National Forest.
Okay. There you go.
And
are these HDRs? They seem so rich.
No, they're just...
Another one of the photographers.
Just Lightroom.
She was taking wild pictures.
Maki Kawakita.
In the forest of people, including herself. I think she's preparing a selfie here.
Yeah, these were... she was doing a series of self-portraits and of herself as fairy tale... subject of fairy tales.
Fun.
Yeah.
Really fun images.
Yeah, she had some interesting stuff.
Is this high in the air?
This was looking down... some cliffs.
The range, I think people are starting to get a sense of the range of the stuff you do.
Yeah, well, and you know, this was great because it was really about just pure photography.
Right.
And go shoot pictures.
Right.
And have fun with it.
Right. And there's, that I agree with you. Oh, look at this pano.
Yeah, so that one was done correctly. You can see all the even edges there. And you know, that would normally be cropped down.
Are these time exposures? It looks like it might be fairly dark in there.
Yeah, it was dark in there.
So longer exposures. There she is again.
Yeah. she did a real interesting set of pictures.
Every photographer on this was unique and had different ideas about what... And, of course, one thing you can count on in Tasmania and Australia in general, lots of sheep.
Yeah, they're everywhere.
Lots of sheep.
A
you got something that we
there.
Did not get a lot of, which is a dramatic sky. It was overcast almost the whole time we were there.
Now,
are you cheating here?
I'm cheating here. And I don't have a version to show you to tell you how I to deconstruct it, but you can see in that image that you see the darkness of the foreground?
Yeah.
That's just a graduated filter coming up from the bottom.
You clever.
And then there's a graduated filter coming down from the top.
Aren't you clever? So this was done in camera, though.
No, those are the graduated filters in Lightroom.
In Lightroom. Don't we love Lightroom?
Yeah, and you know, the thing that I have to say is that it has... there's a lens baby. Yeah, it's taught me how to see differently.
Lightroom has.
Yeah, because the rendering that you get from the final image, you know, is really I'm trying to pre-visualize it in the same way that I did, say, with black and white film versus color film.
Mm-hmm.
And when I would pick up a camera with black and white film in it, I would shoot and see differently than when I had, say, Kodachrome.
Because you knew you had black and white in there.
Yeah, so I'm mentally translating, yeah, how's this going to look in the finished image?
Right.
And what's happened with Lightroom is you have this entirely different range of kinds of look, and it's like having, you know, 30 different films in your camera at the same time, and you can sort of choose mentally how you want that to render in the end.
So you're thinking as you're taking the picture, oh, I'm going to run this through Silver Effects, and I'm going to pop the mid-range tones, that kind of thing?
Yeah, I see light differently.
How interesting.
And it, you know, it becomes an exercise in understanding where your camera is actually capturing highlights and shadow and where, no, those are really gone, or those, you know, there's too much work to rescue it.
How interesting. Wow. Let's show a little bit of your more recent work. We could go on and on, of course, with...
Yeah, this is some of the work that I do. This has been just an absolutely wonderful assignment for public broadcasting, where I've gone around the country shooting people who have been inspired by PBS to do extraordinary things. And this was a young woman who was inspired by Downton Abbey to become a writer.
Wow.
And she has Tourette's syndrome. And this outlet that she has had, and particular the tactile use of the typewriter.
So she literally uses a manual typewriter.
That's literally her room. That is not a set, even though it looks like it.
It does.
It must be. You know, there's no way that's real, but that really was her.
Wow.
And so they just found these amazing people to go around and photograph. And this is a woman who learned to speak Spanish originally from Sesame Street, moved to the States, learned to speak English from Sesame Street again. And she's become a really accomplished children's book author.
No kidding.
And
no kidding.
She just a, you know, fabulous story.
Now, do you bring lights when you go out on a shoot like this?
Yeah, those are lit. These days, a lot of LED lights.
Yeah, because they're light, they're portable, they're cool.
Yeah, people don't sweat.
Yeah.
And in this case, there was a team that was doing video motion work at the same time.
So they had to light it.
So we're working together as a team, and just a wonderful small team. This guy was inspired by the National Parks Program to ride his bike from Florida to Denali in Alaska.
Wow, that's quite a ride.
Quite a character. And
wow. So, okay, so let's talk about the lighting on this. So it's not just natural. There's obviously sunlight there.
So that one had a reflector.
It looks like a bounce reflector.
Yeah, just a little bit of that.
Just to fill his face in. So
yeah, but the kind of real pop that's happening there is
the sun.
Is Lightroom.
No.
Well, you know, that's where I'm getting this, like, nice contrast and nice, you know, the detail
it.
So that the shadows aren't really blocking up. And, you know, what I used to do as a photographer, you know, we'd set all these scrims up and set all this stuff up.
Now you just go, let's dodge it here. Let's burn it there. What are your favorite Lightroom tools? What do you go to a lot?
I use Clarity.
Clarity.
Almost all the time.
Mikkel would say, just 20% of Clarity every shot. Almost.
Yeah.
I put a lot
of there. And then I'm working shadows and highlights.
Do you use the histogram to do that?
No, I don't.
Use the sliders down
there. Yeah. And then fine-tuning color for important images. And now there's burning and dodging.
It's really amazing what
you
can do.
Yeah. And you know what they've done there is they've made a thing, unlike Photoshop, all of the controls and the metaphors are not about mathematics, which is how Photoshop interfaces is built. It's about photographic thinking.
Thinking that way. Yeah. So here's this is the Clarity slider, and it's in the category of presence. So you could see nudging it it's hard to describe what it does.
It enhances local contrast.
Yeah. There you go. Vibrance. What is that? That also is another
vibrance
one.
Vibrance is like saturation, but it works on blues and greens.
And then you use, instead of, you have a histogram up here that you can just drag stuff around a little bit.
You can.
But you get more control if you're working in these exposure, contrast, highlights, sliders here. Yeah. And you can, and you, it's really what quite a difference that you can make in an image.
Yeah, and I think that one of the important things for photographers to do is to understand what those controls can do,
right,
and to try and pre-visualize. And
when you're taking the shot,
yeah,
know ahead of time,
yeah,
I'm going to be able to bring that up, or
yeah, just try and understand what you're going to do with it.
It's, right.
You know, I don't want to sound like the old curmudgeon guy, but
pre-vis,
back in the old days,
think about it ahead of time.
It took so long to do, you know, to do a print. You had to think about it. Oh, do I need more contrast in the shadows? And you know, slider pushing is fine, but
that's all I do. I just kind of go, let's see what happens here. I have to get good enough to kind of start thinking about that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Obviously, yeah. These images of people are so great. And this is what you like to do is portrait.
Yeah, so that's Peter Sagal. He's the host of Wait, Don't
Love
Tell
him.
Me, and did this program on the Constitution, and so shot him out in front of the Lincoln
Memorial. So he's doing his video piece, and you're in the background
shooting? This was just a set of publicity stills, and I had him for 10 minutes. Out there, held a scrim up because... you know, to shadow him from the direct sunlight.
Ah.
Because it was so blindingly
bright. It looks
bright
out there, yeah.
And then, you know, able to pull up the shadows and the contrast in there. He's a funny and smart guy.
Oh, I love him.
I really, really like that guy.
Yeah, yeah.
Gwen Ifill, another PBS person who... and I love the black and white look.
Did you pre-vis that? Did you say, I want to shoot black and white? Or was that the assignment?
So I worked with the creative department there. They wanted to tell the story of their news. It's not really a news team, but their, you know,
their anchors.
Their state. Well, yeah, there's their whole group of people that bring the news. And so, as we talked about it, we came up with this. Well, let's make something that looks like a real classic black and white photojournalism.
Yeah,
and try and make it look. You know, shoot them when they're really working. She's really in a meeting, and she's really. Talking
beautiful
to somebody. Fun. She's another one who I think is just incredibly smart.
Oh, they're all.
And our friend Dr. Russell Brown from Adobe, who's quite a character.
Does his hair really look like that?
That is one of his alter egos.
Wow, that's great.
Yeah.
You're lucky when you get models that look this interesting. This is a gorgeous shot. Also, a little bit of HDR looks like.
Yeah, it has this, you know, this one is fairly heavily worked, but these guys, this was on the beach in Mozambique, and I was doing a project for World Press Photo, building an informational resource for African photographers. And one of the things we needed were, you know, pictures that weren't pictures of people in New York.
Yeah, African people. Yeah.
And so this was, you know, it was after the sun had set and the punchy light was gone, but I knew by looking at it that there was beautiful contrasty photograph in there that I could make
somehow
just doing it in post, you know,
with
a lot of additional added clarity and then
tell me about
burning down
skin, because if you're doing a lot of portraiture, skin is important, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. And
the skin tone in this is gorgeous.
Gorgeous. You know, one of the things I learned from Dean Collins, who was a great photo teacher many years ago, he died, I can't even remember how long ago, but he spoke about lighting people with light skin using the shadows and lighting people with dark skin using the highlights. And it's like, light bulb goes on.
Kidding.
Oh, yeah, that
no
makes
kidding.
Sense.
And yeah.
And in an image like that, one of the real beautiful things that you can do with digital photography is this ability to punch up these highlights through the use of clarity and opening up the fill light.
Right.
And so it accentuates the highlights there, and is a, you know, it's a wonderful way to shoot people with darker skin, and then you throw the water on top of that, and you get this, you know, really beautiful kind of glow that comes off of these guys.
Now, how do you get them to look at you like that? Is that, do you say, look at me, and you're thinking about something, or how do you...
You know, I often, I love shooting with, like, these little guys here, and one of the techniques...
This is a Panasonic Lumix.
Yeah, one of my techniques is, and it's another thing that I like about wide-angle lenses, is I can kind of frame it loosely. I don't really have to be.
You don't have to look through the rangefinder. Yeah.
And then oftentimes I'm holding it up and I'm looking right at the person and I'm making eye contact and trying to, you know, have an interchange with the people.
Yeah, Tamara Lackey, who shoots a lot of kids, does the same thing. Yeah. She'll hold her camera fairly far away from her, and be engaging the kids and shooting like this.
Yes.
And the kids aren't looking at the camera; they're looking at her, and they're engaged.
Yeah,
it's hard to engage with a camera lens.
Yeah, it is, and it's, you know, it's really hard if it's a gigantic you know, big SLR.
Yeah.
And you know, I think a part of this is you have to really own it as the photographer.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes people are embarrassed about shooting the picture and they're, you know, I'm
always,
I'm taking something from this person. I don't know this person. And, and I think, you know, there's this interchange you can have with somebody where you, you're giving them something back in exchange for, you know, there's,
you're not hiding behind the camera.
You're giving them recognition that you're a person right in front of me. And I see that and I acknowledge it. And I think it's cool enough that I want to shoot this picture.
See, people like me, and so I think it's true, probably a lot of people who try photography, is part of the reason we do it is it distances us from the event. We can hide behind the camera. It's a way of being there but not, you know, having to interact. And that's, of course, not going to get you images like this because everybody says you're hiding behind the camera, right? So, so that's a really good point. And I think when I think about people like you and Bruce Dale, who really, Catherine Hall, who do great portraiture, they don't hide behind the camera. You don't hide behind the camera. You're very engaged with the people that you're shooting.
Yeah.
And that's what gets you great portraits.
Yeah, I think that's really important, although I will say on a kind of philosophical level that I have considered my role as a photographer to be a thing that I, you know, that I go into.
Right. Makes it easier. You're playing photography.
Well, it's been my key to access to just amazing things.
Isn't that interesting? Yeah.
And it is separate in some ways from actually being in the moment. You know, my role of being in the moment is the person documenting it.
Historian.
And and there's, you know, that can, you can be a little ambivalent about not necessarily being in, as present that way, but you know, for 40 years or 30 years of doing this, however long it's been, I've loved that role.
It's such a wonderful, wonderful vocation.
Yeah.
But for people like me, avocation as well. It's just really a fun thing to do. We're talking to Peter Krogh, the author of The Damn Book. His newest is for people who use Lightroom, and it's called
Organizing Your Photos.
Simple. Organizing Your Photos. You can get it at thedambook.com. More in a moment. Peter Krogh, our guest on Triangulation. One of my oldest, dearest photography friends, really a mentor for me. You probably don't even know it, but I just watch and I learn and see how you do what you're doing. And you get such great images and such interesting images. And we've been talking about how to keep those images and not lose them, which is an equally important part of the whole process, you know.
You know, and we're entering a really interesting age now where I think photography is becoming a new language, particularly with this next generation. You know, my kids are 17 and 18, and I have a number of kids I'm following who are doing just phenomenal photographic work.
It's almost in their blood now because of Instagram and Facebook and just this way that they share. In fact, Trey Ratcliffe told me, and I think he's probably true, that we're coming to we're going back to, in a way, a pre-verbal era, a visual era.
Yeah.
And kids are growing up expressing themselves not just with words but with images.
Yeah, I think it's integral to both the sharing and communication, but I think it's also integral to the experience itself. That
you
they
can't
consider
go anywhere without them having the camera out and taking a picture
of
it.
And let's not just say them, right?
Us. I mean, we were at the Christmas party
us
last
as a species,
night,
you
our
know?
Christmas party, and Sarah Lane is taken like behind the camera, and Tony Wang, another guy who's really into photography, taking pictures everywhere.
Yeah,
but you know, he had, and I was blown away. He had a camera. What was it? Was it a Sony? It was a $300 point and shoot that had an APS-C sensor. It was doing great. Look, I said the flash didn't go off. He said, "Look."
Oh yeah,
unbelievable.
Yeah.
So the technology, which is nice with these little Lumix cameras, these you can. This was a mirrorless camera, so you can have interchangeable lenses.
Yeah, there's some really interesting things happening.
Where are we going? You're one of those people who likes a smaller camera.
Yeah, and I've been doing a lot of work looking at the where photography is going, both kind of hardware and usage-wise and in the publishing universe. And I see some really interesting things. The smart camera, like what Samsung is putting out with full Android operating system.
Right.
You know, when you think about these cameras with powerful processors and an interface circa 1985, that the change in what's going to be doable with, you know, with a real camera is pretty amazing. Remote sensing is another one. You know, the Sony makes that little thing that clips on your phone, and it's a lens and a sensor.
Yeah, Burke has one of those.
But it doesn't have to clip on your phone.
No, it's really just a lens.
I mean, there's like some super creepy implications of what people might end up doing with that stuff. But
it gets the camera out of the way.
It totally changes the concept of what it is to shoot a picture.
Do you think we're getting good images with smartphones?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we're getting a lot of really terrible ones. But we're also getting...
You have to take a lot of terrible pictures before you start taking good pictures, don't you?
Yeah, you know, I think photography's always had a really important component of the human-machine interface. Mm-hmm. You know, I took a different kind of picture with a 4x5 view camera than I did with a, you know, rangefinder camera.
Right.
And personally, I haven't actually gotten to the point where I feel like I'm doing good pictures with my camera phone, and I don't know what it is, but I see a ton of great work.
People are doing it, but you have to think differently because you can't zoom, you can't, you know, it's kind of all wide angle, it's all, I don't know, I think it's hard to do a good camera, but you're right, I see some amazing
images.
There's
great stuff out there, and you know, it's clearly changing the amount of photography and where it's being done and how it's being distributed.
Traditionally, you know, we ask photographers what are you a Canon or a Nikon guy? What's your go-to camera now?
So I've been a Nikon guy forever.
Yeah.
And I have a D800 for, you know, high resolution.
That's a breakthrough camera.
Yeah, and great video.
Yeah.
I do still love my D700. I actually like dialing it back to that 12 or 14 megapixels, whatever it is, for a lot of the shoots I do.
It's really,
and it's wonderful low light capability. The workflow with a smaller file is actually, you know, a lot easier.
So you don't need 40 megapixels. 12 is enough.
No.
Yeah.
No, and you can make a big, beautiful, you know, 36-inch print off a D700 file.
Yeah.
And not be looking at it saying,
how big do you need this to be?
Wish I had those extra 24 megapixels. So I don't, you know, I'm not hung up on that. What I really want is a great point-and-shoot mirrorless camera.
Right.
The new Panasonics I'm really interested in. Sony has some really interesting stuff.
This and new A7 and A7R, people are very... Yeah. And this is a mirrorless, so it means it's lightweight. You don't have a big body. You don't have the big chunk.
Yeah.
On the other hand, you don't have optical viewfinding through the lens. You have to use a video tap. So that seems like it's less connected.
Yeah, those are getting much, much better.
Are
though.
They?
They're responsive. The new... I can't remember what the number is on the new Panasonic. This is GF11 or something like that. Anyway, it's got Wi-Fi in it.
It's amazing.
And it has... The viewfinder is beautiful.
Yeah.
Frederick Johnson...
Is that what he's shooting?
Yeah, he did an interview with me with that, and it was...
He did the video interview with it.
Oh, yeah. It shoots beautiful HD video.
So, it's Micro Four Thirds, or...?
Yeah. And so now you have this whole choice of lenses by other manufacturers, which I think is a really wonderful development as well.
I really like Micro Four Thirds. I feel like the sensor size is so small. I'm worried that I'm not getting, for instance, the bokeh that I might get with a full frame sensor.
Yeah, and that's, you know, there's something about that larger sensor that does give you a nicer look to the image. But
boy, it's nice to have a small camera.
Yeah.
When we did this recent trip of Europe, both Lisa and I took the OMDs, the Olympus OMDs, which are Micro
Four Thirds. Olympus is making great.
Very
great
compact,
images.
Great images.
Yeah.
beautiful images, lots of detail.
Yeah.
Great color. I don't know, 12 megapixels or not. Maybe they're more than that, but it's not overwhelmingly detailed.
And it's plenty for what?
It's plenty.
Yeah. It's not how many, it's which ones.
Yes. Always such a pleasure to talk to you, Peter. I'm anytime you're out here, come back on. I want everybody to go to thedambook.com. It stands for Digital Asset Management. Take a look at all this stuff. There's also a link to Peter's portfolio and more information about him at peterkroeg.com. But the book that is brand new for us, there's one for, more serious photographers, the multi-catalog workflow book. But the book that's for us, Organizing Your Photos with Lightroom 5, I'm downloading it right away. Because I really feel like I shouldn't need another app. I should be able to do it all in Lightroom.
Yeah.
That's what I'm using. If I could do it all in Lightroom, I'd be very happy without losing any images.
And I think the key thing there for most people, I think the area of confusion has been which of these tools should you use to organize your stuff with.
Right.
So my approach in this book has been very much, let me guide you through the tools I think you ought to use in the order I think you ought to use them. I'm not, dumping out a toolbox on the garage floor and saying, fix my car. I'm saying, you do this and then you do this. And understanding the difference between the philosophy behind keywords for tagging your images what they're about versus using collections to put them together in useful creative groups.
That seems to overlap to me.
And that's one of the things I address. And
awesome.
I think I make it really clear how, you have a storage layer and then a tagging layer.
Right.
And tags like keywords, location, and date are just to let you find and filter what you want to find and filter a subset of the collection.
Right.
And then the stuff you want to make on top of it, a slideshow or a portfolio or a book or just my favorite pictures of this vacation or my work for this assignment for this client, that all needs to be done in collections. That's how Lightroom is built.
Right.
And once you see that and you see that there's only one of those tools that you can see in each of the modules, and that's collections.
That's the way they do it, yeah.
That's where you're supposed to do all this work.
That and makes
sense. You can build this out really deeply.
That makes sense.
And you can take, the group of pictures you put together for the slideshow of Josie when she graduated.
Right.
And then when you want to do the birthday slideshow
that's
2 years
collection.
Later.
Yeah.
You
but
start
I can
with
take Josie's you, tagged photos
yeah,
and put them in there.
You can start with
sense.
The ones you've got in one collection and then add to it, make a new one, but without blowing up the old one.
The more I use Lightroom, the more I want to understand it. So
I think this will make it really clear what that otherwise kind of confusing array of organizing tools.
Now,
are.
When I buy it, it's a download, obviously, because it's
got video in it. At the moment,
that's
how we've got it, yeah.
And so do I just put it on my computer and read it there? Is that how...
That's how we're currently configured. I'm, very interested in getting it up and running for iPad.
iBook Author, it seems like it would be a natural for iBook Author. Have you played with that at all?
We could talk a little bit about the whole world of becoming your own publisher these days. But
that's new for you?
Yeah. It's, my book was published by O'Reilly.
Right.
And while I've done these big projects like the one for the Library of Congress, this new venture where we own the whole publishing company and we're putting the whole thing out is a new way to make this whole thing work.
I think it makes perfect sense. And
even
people like Jerry Pournelle, science fiction author, who have sold millions of copies of books and made his living in print for years, he's totally sold on the idea of doing it yourself and doing it in e-books. It just blows him away to see how much more of the money the author keeps, and yet the price is lower for the end user. It makes sense all around.
Yeah, in my case, I have a particular thing I'm building around, this idea of preserving your stuff and organizing your stuff.
Right.
And so to build a set of published tools, whether those are e-books, paper books, and to keep that all within a universe that's my own.
Well, I want to buy this. It's $35. You said you had a coupon code for us. Can I use that?
Yes.
What is it? Do you know?
Wait
a minute. I might have it. Or Carson
sent it
might have
to it. You.
You sent it to me? Okay,
yeah,
take it off my screen so I can look and see, John. You emailed it to me. Let me. It's in my email, so I'll check right now. Because I'm about to buy this book. Let's see. We're going to look for Peter Krogh. Peter Krogh is our guest. TheDamnBook.com is the place to go get the book. And the code is...
I want to say it's PDF TWIT.
It's long.
Yeah.
PDF TWIT 10-1214.
Yes.
And you can use it right now. I can use it right now.
Yes.
But we'll make sure it's good through the rest of January.
Yeah, and that gives 10% off any of the electronic books
we're
selling.
Look at that. It's already done it.
Yeah.
PDF TWIT, PDF dash TWIT dash 10-1214.
Yeah, this whole ability to set up distribution.
Isn't that nice?
It's just amazing. And,
nice.
I love what you've done. I love what you've done with the place here, Leo.
I'm a believer in going direct to the audience.
Yeah.
And if you can do it, the benefits are huge, I think.
And you know, this is useful for everybody who's a creative person, you know, whether you're a filmmaker or an author or a photographer or a broadcaster, or increasingly melding all of those together into something new. It's
for the creative, it's a wonderful time.
Yeah,
I think
it's exciting.
Yeah, it's challenging in some ways.
Very challenging.
You've got to do more of
times.
It than you ever did before.
And scary as the existing.
Let's everybody should go out and buy the book, and then won't be so scary.
Yeah, I'll be a lot less scared. If that happens.
We'll reassure Peter anyway.
Yeah, and I will. You know, for me, it's been a long term commitment to help my people, to help photographers. Make use of their stuff and
I think
keep
that's
it.
True too.
And,
yeah.
And it's it's been a wonderful, rewarding thing for me to do.
Yeah, I think anything we can do to support arts in this society is good.
Well, and photography incredibly important for self expression.
Well, it's an art we can all do.
I think it is the art form that
paint
is
or draw or sing, as many of you know. But I can get a camera. Or a camera phone, and I can express myself and now share it with people. And really, I'm not saying you're going to make a living at it, but you can really express yourself, and that's really the bottom line.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you can integrate it with other things that you're doing. And I see it in the new generation. They just expect,
Of course I'll
photography or video or whatever, and I'll integrate it with.
Yeah, of course I'll do that.
And
it's all my oyster.
Yeah.
The world is my oyster. Peter Krogh, thank you for being here. Peter, KROGH, if you want to go to his website, peterkrogh.com. And, of course, The Damn Book, if you want to buy The Damn Book, TheDamnBook.com. Thank you, Peter. Great to see you again.
Leo, thank you so much. It's been a real pleasure.
We do Triangulation every Wednesday. We pre-recorded this one, but normally every Wednesday, about 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern Time, 4 p.m. plus 12 is 16 plus 8 is midnight UTC on twit.tv. So
that's
it's late.
That's good there.
I'm good with the math.
Yeah.
I've only done this calculation every week for 2 years. You'd think I'd
know
by now.
Maybe you just memorize it.
I think that's really what's happening. If you can watch live, do, because we get to ask questions in the chat room and so forth. But if not, of course, on-demand audio and video available always after the fact, twit.tv/TRI or wherever your favorite netcasts are aggregated around the globe. Thanks for joining us this week for Triangulation. Thank you, Peter. We'll
Thanks
see you next time.
Me.